This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell from the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story.
Charlene Carr, welcome to Better Reading.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so Charlene's in Canada. I'm in San Francisco. I mean, the world is getting smaller, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Charlene spent much of her childhood creating elaborate, multifaceted storylines for her dolls and reading under the blankets with a flashlight when she was supposed to be asleep. I think so many people in our community have confessed to me that they were such avid readers and that's what they did. Charlene's also a bit of a nomad. She's lived in 4 countries and 7 Canadian provinces. After working an array of mostly writing-related jobs, she decided the time had come to focus exclusively on her true love, novel writing. She's written a book. It's called Hold My Girl. It's her 10th novel, and she recently received a Canada Council for the Arts grant to revise her next novel. Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, you actually, you don't look old enough to have done all those things, but anyway. Let's delve into your career. So tell me firstly where you were brought up, where you grew up, and then why it is you started moving.
So I was raised in Toronto for the most part. Yeah. Just before I was 15, my parents moved me to New Brunswick, which is a very small town called Riverview. And so I graduated from high school there and wanted out. Yeah. And I didn't actually go that far. I went to college for a year in Prince Edward Island and then a couple of the other provinces doing French programs, intensive programs. So I lived in British Columbia. I lived in Quebec. Then I moved back to New Brunswick, finished my degree. During that, I also moved to England and Poland for small stints, you know.
You sound like an Australian.
Just all the moving around.
Yeah, because we move around so much. But I think you're right. I think Canadians move around a lot as well, don't they?
Some do. Yeah. I also know lots of people. My husband, for example, you know, he was born and raised in Nova Scotia. He lived in New Brunswick for a little while, which isn't very far away. Newfoundland isn't very far away. Yeah. And so I think you asked how that led to my writing as well.
Yeah. Well, firstly, where was the longest you lived? I'm just trying to work out the influences that
absolutely.
That
so, I mean, Toronto was 15 years or almost 15 years. And then the longest I've lived outside of that would be Nova Scotia. I first moved here in 2007, but then I had about 4.5 years in Newfoundland. So I'd say my biggest influences are certainly Nova Scotia and Ontario. Yeah, as far as, you know, forming me.
Did you ever go to Australia?
No, I haven't. I'd love to one day.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me how your career panned out before you decided that you're going to write. So what did you do? What did you study at school? And was it that you always had the urge, like, you know, was story in your head the whole time?
From when I was a child, being an author, being a writer is always something that I've wanted to do. Now, I never really thought that it would be the main thing. It was always, I'll be a teacher and an author. I'll be a social worker and an author, a veterinarian and an author. And so I went to school. I studied English literature. I have a BA and an MA in English literature and then a Bachelor of Journalism, which of course relates to writing as well. And I worked an array of jobs, as I said. The one that really transformed my focus into writing was I actually quit a job that I was working in that was giving me a ton of stress, sold my house so I would have a safety net, and decided to start a communications business with the goal of with all the wonderful free time I would have on my own schedule.
Yeah, right. Diluted.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I was starting out, I was probably working 60 to 70 hours a week to make ends meet and, you know, trying not to touch that nest egg. But eventually I did start, finding good enough contracts that I was able to work regular hours and sometimes even less. There would be a big ebb and flow. I was doing facilitation most of the time. And so, I finished my first novel during that time. I had started it 10 years previous.
What I find and what our listeners want to know, I mean, you know, authors, by the time they come to me, well, you know, they've done it, it's published and they're here talking about it. But that's not the process, is it? It's so, well, I mean, you know, there's one, writing and the discipline of writing. There's the idea, right? Mm-hmm. The storyline, and then there's getting published, which is as big as the other two, right?
Yes.
Tell me and about so, that.
Well, I'm saying I finished writing that first novel when I went into business for myself, but I had started it 10 years previous.
Yeah.
So there is a lot that goes into that. And so when you say getting published, do you mean those first novels or Hold My Girl? Because there's a very different process.
Okay, now let's start with the first ones and we'll talk about Hold My Girl as well.
All right. So I had sent that manuscript out to a couple of local publishers and I got really lovely feedback, but nobody took it on.
Was it fiction?
It was fiction. Yeah, it was a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't really know what to do from there. I knew that for bigger publishers, you needed an agent. I had no idea how to get an agent. Because of my studies and my focus, I'd never really read anything but very literary fiction, the type that is studied in universities. And I knew that what I was writing at the time wasn't quite that. I thought it was very good. I thought it had value. I thought that there would be readers out who wanted it. But, you know, I didn't know. I'd never read any Kristen Hannah or Leah Moriarty or Jodi Picoult. I read all the very literary, you know, winning awards type of writers. And then a friend of mine, this was around 2013, he knew about self-publishing and it was just really taking off at that time. And coming from a literary, very academic community, I was kind of like, no, I can't do that. Because especially in the beginning, there was this idea that it was, I mean, for lack of a better word, that it was for hacks, for people who couldn't find a publisher. And he, you know, knew a lot more about it than me and said, like, yes, there's some books out there self-published like that, but there's a lot that are very quality books and that are just as valued. And so I wrote a totally new book with that in mind because my 10-year labor of love baby, it couldn't be my test project. And so I started studying all about self-publishing. I started studying the craft of writing more. I started reading, I guess what you would call commercial or genre fiction, but a lot of the stuff that was hitting the bestseller list that I'd never read before. And I kind of realized like, oh, this is more what I'm writing. I'm not writing this, you know, more slow paced, very contemplative, metaphorical fiction that I spent my life reading. And it was really exciting and really fun. And, you know, I wasn't making a lot of money, but I was reaching readers.
Such an interesting discovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you discovered that about yourself, that here you are. I mean, it's, you know, genre is such a big topic. I mean, funnily enough, only last night I was talking about genre with our community because we were talking about the romance genre and people tend to pigeonhole that genre and say that, you know, it has no value because it's, you know, it's considered commercial fiction, but it's also feel good and whatever. But I was certain that our community don't just read one genre. So I asked them last night live on Facebook and I was dead right. They read across all genres.
And I think the thing is, genre is just to kind of try to categorize, but when it comes to a quality book, it can be any genre. I mean, look at C.S. Lewis, look at J.R.R. Tolkien. Well, it's fantasy.
It's all about story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And whatever that category, that story. But also, you know, too, I mean, you know, we all know that genres was made up, really, it's a marketing term in a way.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, back to you.
To give people an idea of where they're looking and what they're going to want to find. And I read across all genres too. There are some that I tend to go more toward, but certainly if the quality of the writing is there and the story and the characterization, it could be about anything. So I, as I mentioned, you know, I was finding readers, I was connecting to them, and I was really enjoying it. And so I turned that book that I had written specifically for self-publishing into a series of standalones. And then after that, I decided to publish that 10-year baby, self-publishing, and then I did a trilogy. And as I was learning more and more, I was realizing how much this is a business if you're going to. And in the community, it's usually called independent publishing rather than self. And it's because you become basically a small independent publisher and you've got to do everything for yourself or hire it out. And if that's not something you're inclined to, which I wasn't, I mean, I think I was doing okay at it, but it was draining me and it was taking away my energy and my spark for writing.
Well, because what you do then is you have all the back end, like the distribution, the mail, the how do you connect with your readers, the discovery. I mean, there's so
much. Advertising, marketing. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was really a lot. And so when I finally became a mother, I realized that I just didn't have the mental or emotional bandwidth to be an independent publisher, an author, and a present mother. And something needed to go. And so, you know, obviously,
so you couldn't get rid of the
writing.
Children.
It wasn't going to be my baby.
Exactly. So keep the baby.
Yes. So I specifically wrote Hold My Girl with the goal of finding an agent and finding a publisher. And so that was a whole new journey.
Okay, I want to talk about that. So do you think you wrote it, like even the storyline, that you wrote it for a different audience, a different purpose? Tell me what the difference was in writing your others compared to writing Hold My Girl.
I think it's a very similar audience for my other books. And so the main difference really was making sure that there was a hook, that there was something that in a sentence or two could get people really interested and really intrigued, you know, to get past that slush pile. Because a lot of agents, as I did my research, I learned it's not unusual for them to get anywhere from 100 to 300 queries a day. And so they might not read the whole thing. I needed to come up with an idea that, and it worked. A lot of times when I tell the idea of Hold My Girl, I'll say the first, you know, two sentences of that elevator pitch and people will go,
So, why don't you share that with us now?
Difference. Absolutely. So it's a dual narrative novel about two women who go through IVF and learn a couple of years later that there has been a switch and their eggs were switched. And so we follow the complications and emotional trial that ensues as they both try to become the mother of the one surviving child. So I think that was the biggest difference in writing and just thinking about the marketing aspect of it in the beginning and how I would market it. And I didn't think about that for any of my other novels. I just had a story and I wanted to tell it. In a way, this was the same. I had a story and I wanted to tell it, but I just made sure that it had that angle as well.
Do you think having a child, would you have been able to write that story without having had a child yourself?
Absolutely not. And the inspiration from it actually came from my own experience of having my daughter. So I've been struggling with infertility for over 10 years now. And 5 years ago, I had my daughter via IVF. And when she was born, so for those listeners out there, I'm a mixed race Black woman, and she emerged visibly white. And in the first few months, I really couldn't see any of myself in her features. And so I was genuinely concerned and genuinely, just worried that there might've been a switch at the clinic. And there were a lot of questions and a lot of fears that prompted during that time. And I didn't really delve into them because it was just too much. And so very thankfully, around the time she was 8 months old, and then completely by the time she was a year, her features shifted. I could see myself in her. I had no fear. And that was right around the time I decided to start my new novel, because I decided I'd take the first year of her life off. And yeah, when that idea came to me and I started thinking about the fears that I had only touched upon before, most specifically, what would I owe to this other woman out there who'd gone through all these infertility struggles the way I had and whose biological daughter I was raising if there had actually been a switch? And so that's what I used to develop the two characters in Hold My Girl. Mm. And I think it's very universal too, because motherhood is such a theme for all of us, whether we're mothers or whether it's just the relationship that we've had with our own mothers or if our mother was absent. I mean, I think everyone can find something to relate to in the question of what makes a mother.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Absolutely. I don't have children, but, you know, my mother died last year. And I, you know, I had a, you know, good relationship with her. We were migrants, you know. She's Lebanese. My listeners would already know this. I speak about my heritage a lot. You know, and things were tough, you know. She had the immigration problem and raising the six kids and not speaking the language that she knew. But, you know, a really big, a big full life. She was such a matriarch, you know. She was definitely by far the head of the family, and that has been a big loss, you know. So there is so much tied up with motherhood on so many levels. Yeah. And also the responsibility. Okay, you've got, you're writing the book, you've mm-hmm. you've got a one-year-old. I mean, this yes. isn't finding the time to write the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that as well, I mean, I know you talk about the story behind the story, and I love talking about that aspect of it, because when I was writing my first novel over those 10 years, the reason it took so long is that I had in my mind that in order to write, I needed this beautiful stretch of time, like 4 to 7 hours, where I could just sit down and me and the page, and I needed the right moment and attitude and mindset. And it was actually doing NaNoWriMo probably around 2009, 2010. Are you familiar with NaNoWriMo? Oh, okay. I'm not sure. Maybe it hasn't made its way to Australia.
No, tell us.
Yeah. So it happens in November every year. And it's this big community, like tons of writers. You can sign up. And the goal is to write 50,000 words in a month.
Oh, I have heard of it. I didn't know that's what it was called. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So I did that, and it was just mind-blowing to me, because in order to reach that, I mean, you can't do that and live a life and have these long stretches of time to write. So I learned to write in 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and just sit down and get the words on the page and not worry if they're perfect and not worry about editing or if yesterday's scene flows perfectly in today's scene, just getting those words down. And so I did that with the book, the first book that I wrote specifically for self-publishing, and that was a real eye-opener. And where I was in my life after that, I actually did have a lot of time to sit down and write. And so I started having these big word count goals of, you know, 2,500 words a day, because that was kind of my wow. job at that point. Wow. I wasn't able to work because of health reasons, like work outside the house. And so, you know, I was focused on my fertility and I was focused on my writing. And then when I was writing with a one-year-old, obviously that was impossible. And I remember initially thinking, oh, okay, I'll do like a 1,200 word count goal. That should be reasonable. And I was failing every time I sat mm-hmm. down to write. And it was really demoralizing. And I just thought, back to that first NaNoWriMo experience, and realized anything I can get down matters. So I made myself a goal of 300 words 4 days a week, which sounds like nothing, but it adds up. And so a lot of Hold My Girl was written in 15 to 20 minute spurts. And just, you know, some days I only got 150 words, but as long as I sat down 4 days a week, I called myself a success. And there were other days where, you know, my daughter happened to nap longer than expected and I did get 1,000 words, or, you know, I decided to write a little bit in the evening and I got a burst of inspiration and I stayed up a little later and got some good writing in. Yeah. So it wasn't simple and it wasn't easy, but to anyone out there who thinks, you know, you need time to write, anyone, I think, I shouldn't say anyone, almost anyone, at least, I don't know everybody's life, but almost everyone could find time to write 300 words 4 days a week, if that's what you want to do.
That's a really good tip. I mean, I hear so many stories, but you know, too, it's practice as well. Like whether those words ever make the page or make the book or not, it's really about using the tools, isn't it? You know, we often talk about practice in relation to music, you know, guitar and violin and piano and whatever, but not to writing. But I think too, I mean, you know, I mean, you're still young and you've got way more books in you, but, you know, if you're to look back on your career so far, all of it was practice to get to where you are now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you learn from every book and you grow and you figure out your own style and you figure out styles you want to explore.
Was this book very different to what you'd written before in terms of genre? No.
No, I don't think so. No. I think, and especially the draft that I queried, I think it was very similar to what I'd written before. And so when we talk about, you know, words making the page initially and whether they'll make the end, I actually ended up cutting over 60,000 words, while working with my agent from the version that I queried to her of Hold My Girl. And I ended up adding another 30,000. So, yeah, there was a lot. And so I think the main difference maybe from my other books is there's a much stronger focus on structure and pacing, perhaps, that came through working with my agent, who's very editorial. But the writing itself, the style, the voice, I don't think that's very different.
And how was this one published? How was it that you didn't self-publish? And how was it that you got it published through traditional publishing media?
So basically just querying it, finding an agent who wanted to take it on.
That's not easy though.
No, you know what? It actually wasn't too bad.
Oh, really?
I expected, I did so much. And I think part of the reason, you know, obviously there's luck, obviously there's timing, but I did a lot of research. Finding out what agents are looking for and what's going to get them excited. I took webinars. I signed up for courses. I mean, my query letter probably had over 30 versions before I got to the one that I was ready to query. And then for every agent I sent it out to, I no one was the same. I personalized it for every agent. And so I had sent it out probably to around 20 or so agents when there's the Women's Fiction Writers Association. Are you familiar with that? So it's an association in the US, but I think it's open to members from everywhere. And they have a pitch contest every year. And agents come in and you get to write like an elevator pitch and then the first 500 words of your manuscript, and they get to look at them all and then decide whether they'd like you to send you extra pages. And so to my great joy and excitement, I think I had 9 people ask for requests, and that might have been the most in that round of the pitch contest. And probably about 8 of those asked for the full manuscript. And so I got an offer very quickly. I hadn't been out on submission for more than a month before I got an offer. Through that. And I think it wouldn't actually, the really interesting thing is the first agent who offered me representation had turned down my query that I had emailed to her 3 weeks earlier.
What?
And so, yeah. And so yeah. She has an assistant. So I don't know. And I never ended up asking her whether she had ever even seen my initial query or if my assistant just turned it down. And so my manuscript was 120,000 words, which is very long for, you know, what would probably be maybe under a women's fiction genre. Like, unless you're Kristen Hannah, you know, it's for someone who essentially would be a debut. And they actually almost didn't allow me into the pitch competition because of that. 100,000 was supposed to be the cap. But the day I was in email conversation with the organizer of the competition, she had sent me an article from an agent who talked about this 100,000 word cap. And that same day, that agent asked for my full manuscript.
Wow.
So I was able to use that to get into the competition. So, I mean, it was just amazing. And then from that, I let the other agents that I had queried know that I'd have an offer of representation. And so the agent I ended up going with was someone who kind of jumped on it based on that.
Yeah, wow. Well, congratulations.
So, thank you. Yeah, it was mind-blowing and a little out of the norm.
Yeah, but like, you know, I mean, what I think people like to hear, and particularly aspiring writers, that you say it's easy, but, you know, there's a lot of work that you put behind it.
Well, that happened quickly, but I had 9 novels behind me, This wasn't the first.
And you'd written
been training 20... and honing my craft for years.
Yeah, and you'd written 12 personal letters or 20 personal letters. I mean, you know, it's not easy. There's a process to it. Yeah.
You know, I don't mean to say it was easy. It's just that it was a lot quicker than I thought it would be.
Yeah, because it's
I expected to wait a year or more, you know?
Yeah, it's a compelling story. Congratulations, Charlene. We're out of time. I have enjoyed our conversation very much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
If you'd like more information about Better Reading, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play or the iBook Store. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.